Now, the Biden administration says it's standing by Dr. Anthony Fauci after last week's release of thousands of his emails during the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. The bulk of the messages were obtained by BuzzFeed through open records requests. The Washington Post acquired a few hundred as well. The emails detail his communications with senior U.S. officials, overseas counterparts, and everyday Americans. They cover the debate over mask wearing, the origins of the virus, whether the Trump administration was censoring him, and more. Some of his comments line up with things he said publicly. In some other cases, there's not a perfect match. On Friday, President Biden told reporters he's, quote, very confident in Fauci. And even though White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki didn't comment on the email specifically, she said his job is safe.
Can you imagine any circumstance where President Biden would ever fire him?
No.
Some congressional Republicans say the emails prove it's time for Fauci to go. We want to know what you think of Dr. Anthony Fauci at 800-642-1234. Do you think he did a good job advising the country through the pandemic? Do you have less confidence in him? What questions do you have about his role as a chief medical advisor now to the White House? And do you have thoughts or questions about these emails? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Natalie Bettendorf is a contributing writer to BuzzFeed. She combed through the Fauci emails. Natalie, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
And Phil Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University and author of Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. Phil, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back, Rob.
Natalie, I want to start with the pursuit of these emails. What kind of things were you asking for in your request?
Yeah, so for those who aren't familiar with how a FOIA request works, and that's the Freedom of Information Act, Jason, my co-reporter on this story, recently went through a lot of the emails that we've been getting in from this batch, but it started way back in March of 2020, right when the WHO was declaring COVID-19 a global pandemic. Now, the way that this works is you have to be very specific in asking for these emails and asking for any kind of government agency documents. So Jason actually filed multiple requests for these emails. And we asked for all emails, texts sent and received by Dr. Fauci mentioning or referring to COVID-19, coronavirus, and any and all internal studies on COVID. So that was the number one thing we had to do, is be really specific to the National Institute of Health to say, this is what we're looking for. And really, these over 3,200 pages of emails have trickled in over, you know, months and over a year now. So that's been a long ongoing story and investigation for us.
And you've had a lot of reading material in this time, Natalie. What were some of the biggest things that stuck out to you as you were going through them?
Yeah, I think the thing that Jason and I were trying to focus on the most was really looking at Dr. Fauci's tone. We had the privilege of reading these emails, a very behind the scenes look at who is this man and who had all this pressure on him right from the beginning of 2020, of this pandemic that really took over the world. And we were seeing it unfold in real time while reading these emails. You know, we could see the timestamps, we could see who he was communicating with and who he was ignoring. You know, that was so important for us to really look at, you know, who is Dr. Fauci and what are we not seeing beyond these press conferences that he's doing? One email that really stood out to me, I think, is when he was communicating with an ABC News reporter, and this was earlier on in 2020, and this reporter was very curious about what Dr. Fauci thought the death toll would be from COVID-19 and proposed the number of 500,000. And Dr. Fauci replied and said he thought that number was way too high. And here we are, you know, in June of 2021, and we are seeing a number that is far beyond 500,000 deaths. And it is devastating, but it really shows, you know, it's Dr. Fauci's a human, and he didn't know how much of a impact this virus would have.
Now, Phil, what was your reaction to what you've seen in these messages, this window into a key player in the earliest stages of these emails of the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, in reading these emails, and I think people should read them, it's really great reporting, and it's a really important, I think, historical archive for the pandemic. You see what a sort of unenviable position a civil servant like Tony Fauci is in, with pressure to sort of underplay the severity and significance of the pandemic coming politically. but also real awareness in the public health community about its severity. And, you know, you see a civil servant in a position like that has sort of three options. They can sort of resign or, you know, get out of town. They can essentially accede to what the administration wants them to do, or they can exercise voice and actually be a person who's speaking truth to power. The third option here is really the most difficult. And you see in these emails the way that Fauci sort of finessed this, in part by building coalitions, I think, within the administration, outside of the administration, of developing a reputation for speaking clearly, plainly, respectfully in a moment where that kind of language and conversation isn't that common. And so, I mean, it's a really quite a delicate balancing act that somebody like that has to perform. And I think it's emblematic of the tense relationship that career civil servants had with the Trump administration really for 4 years.
Talking to Phil Rocco from Marquette University and Natalie Bettendorf with BuzzFeed, looking at Dr. Anthony Fauci's emails, large releases, many of them from a request from BuzzFeed, and what they tell us about the early response to COVID-19. You can join in with your reactions, your questions at 800-642-1234. Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky has been one of Dr. Fauci's biggest critics all along, calling for him to be fired now after the release of these emails, in particular over Fauci and the issue of the origins of the virus. Here's Senator Rand Paul on Fox News last week.
And as you know, gain of function is where you take an animal virus and you make it into a super virus that infects humans. They were doing this at the Wuhan lab. Dr. Fauci still denies it to this day. But in his private emails, he puts in the subject line, urgent, we must discuss this gain of function research. So he knows it's gain of function and he needs to be pinned down on this.
Natalie, can you tell us more about some of the response we've seen from some congressional Republicans and how it matches up with what's actually in the emails we've seen?
Yeah, so something that Jason and I made sure to focus on when we were reading through these emails is that we can't really interpret or, you know, make assumptions about what was going on in Fauci's mind, what were his certain motives or intentions, if he had any, right, while he was sending these emails. It's really important from a journalistic perspective to read these emails for what they are. What is the actual content? And, you know, there has been communication in some of these emails about, you know, this, you know, theory of where the virus came from. Did it come from a lab? And that's something that's been on all of our minds. But personally, as someone who has read through the majority of these emails and split it with Jason, you know, that is not a conclusion that we could come to. And that's why we didn't state it in our article. These are things that were happening in the discussions, right, in a lot of the emails, but there was nothing conclusive, right, from what we could read. And so I think what's important is to really be very realistic about the actual content of these emails rather than reading between the lines or making guesses as to what this could have said. So I think coming from a reporting perspective, our main goal is to make sure these are accurate and these are verifiable and then put them out in the world for the public to do with what they will, because this is public information from a government agency.
And Phil, your thoughts on the politics of the origin of the virus? And again, it should be very clear, we don't know the origin of the virus. The direct from animals possibility is still out there. There's more openness to the idea of investigating a possible lab leak, though no direct evidence of that either. But it's become a big political issue, Phil. What do you make of it?
Right. I think it's really, really important to note that the evidence that you would need to point in one direction or the other is capacious. And there are many gaps in that story about the lab leak hypothesis that I think will be a very long time before we figure out. Of course, the reason that this matters is not merely getting to the bottom of the scientific controversy. This is being grafted onto a broader political controversy because COVID sort of from the beginning was entangled both in domestic political disputes about what government should have done, the sort of directing attention to the sort of origins of the virus helps to sort of defray or distract attention from sort of the domestic challenges of like, okay, a pandemic came to our shores. You know, what was our response and was it appropriate? Sort of distracts attention from that. But I think it's also grafted onto this larger geopolitical conflict between the United States and China. And I think it's worth trying to separate those two things, because right now in this discussion over this lab leak hypothesis, they're very entwined. And so being able to set that aside and separate it is a very, very difficult task. But we have to realize those two things as they're currently being discussed are heavily entwined with one another in the way that they're being brought up.
We're taking a look at Dr. Anthony Fauci's emails from the early days of the pandemic. BuzzFeed News and other outlets obtained thousands of messages through Freedom of Information Act requests. Natalie Bettendorf was part of one of those efforts. She's a contributing writer at BuzzFeed and studied these emails. Phil Rocco, also with us, assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, author of Obamacare Wars. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I guess my biggest anger with Dr. Fauci is due to his duplicity that these emails show. There were a lot of people who were telling us the correct information that through the media were totally denigrated and made to look like fools. And I think of people like the anesthesiologist who was an advisor to Stanford anesthesiologist that was an advisor to Trump, who was telling that the correct information throughout, yet the media totally lambasted him and even got him to be censured by his own medical school. I guess I find so many people who
which information, Charlie, in particular?
About the lockdown, about masks, about all the stuff. It became a political football rather than a real search for truth. And there were people's businesses that were ruined because people were following, quote unquote, the science that actually wasn't scientific. And I guess there was a lot of duplicity because of the politics involved, as opposed to really saying this is what we know and this is a correct way to go forward. Anyone who Facebook would take off anybody who said that the Wuhan lab could have leaked the virus. They said this is a conspiracy. They had 28 virologists, famous virologists, say that this wasn't true. And yet now we're going, oh, wait, this might be true.
Charlie, you know, I gotcha. Thanks for the call. Phil, duplicity from Dr. Fauci, Charlie is saying.
Well, I think one of the challenges in dealing with a novel coronavirus, viral event is, especially at the outset, there's a lot of confusion. You can see that in the emails, because the science is still kind of coming in as the pandemic is happening. I mean, I would say, however, that on the issue, for example, of masks or social distancing, I mean, the evidence has pretty clearly borne out, and, you know, you don't have to take my word for it. You can go and actually look at the sort of meta-analyses of numerous studies that have been conducted to show the effectiveness of those non-pharmaceutical interventions, which, if you think back to the beginning of the pandemic, with thousands of people dying every day, those were the tools that we had. And so while I think that there's certainly a lot of confusion, and that confusion can breed political conflict and kind of political predation on the scientific controversy, you know, I would emphasize that, you know, at least on the question of those non-pharmaceutical interventions, I think in the end, those will have been shown to be highly effective.
Thanks for the call, Charlie. We'll go to Pat now in Three Lakes. Pat, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a son and a daughter-in-law that are in the medical field, and they thought Dr. Fauci was spot on all the time. He was operating under a handicap when you had the leader of the free world telling people they should probably drink Lysol. And also, as far as Rand Paul is concerned, what is Rand Paul? He wants to argue with Dr. Fauci all the time, and Dr. Fauci wins the arguments, and Rand Paul just gets a little bit madder. So anyway, my whole thrust on this is Fauci did a heck of a job at a very, very difficult time. And so if you had a couple of emails throughout this period that don't jive, who the hell cares, right?
Thanks for the call. Natalie, a lot of people were emailing Dr. Fauci to offer encouragement, as I think Pat was there, and even just ask him ask him questions about the COVID-19 virus, even just members of the public. What kind of things did we see there?
Yeah, I think the most notable thing for me when reading through these emails were emails from people who were not health officials or people who were in positions of power. They were regular people who were very freaked out and very concerned about this virus, and especially in the onset of the pandemic, like we've talked about in early 2020. I mean, these emails range from January of 2020 to June of 2020, so those first 6 months of last year. And so, you know, Dr. Fauci was fielding these emails and actually responding on his personal volition to many people who had basic questions about, you know, was it safe to fly domestically, right? Or people who had asked him, like, I have this certain vaccine. If I get a vaccine for this type of pneumonia, will this protect me? Will this protect my loved ones? And Fauci was very personable in his responses and actually giving medical advice and really advising people who were very scared, because he understood that in his position, he could be someone who people turned to when they needed some advice or were unable to answer these questions from their own doctors or medical experts. So I found that fascinating.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll bring on Troy in Muskego now. Troy, hello.
Oh, I just wanted to say that. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say that the last person that called in hit it spot on. I mean, you can tell by the caller that was even before him. Like, a lot of this is just conspiracy. And let's just look at facts, because I haven't, you know, the last caller pointed out facts. The facts are we had a president that lied. And because he lied, he had a doctor under him that we don't know what's going on. He could have been threatening the guy's family. You know what I mean? We don't know what kind of threats that Trump and his administration was making to Dr. Fauci. All I know is I was grateful to God that Fauci was not associated with Trump. And he was kind of like, he had to kind of walk that line. And we had somebody in there that would, you know, keep us going through this pandemic and shoot it to us straight. This is just conspiracy theory. You got people that support Trump that don't even believe, they believe the election was rigged. That's why they're pushing this theory.
I got you. Troy, I think we take your point. Just don't have too much time left. I want to get our guests in on this. Natalie, one thing that stood out in a lot of the emails was Anthony Fauci saying he wasn't being muzzled or censored for the most part anyway by the Trump administration. What kind of things did we see there?
Right. Yeah, that was a very interesting email that we came across, where people actually expressed to Dr. Fauci that they were scared for him, asking if he was being harassed by the Trump administration. And, you know, he was very stable and very secure in his point that he was making sure that politics did not meddle with his work as a physician, as a medical advisor. And so when people did express their concern, you know, he was making sure to communicate that he is not there to get in the mix of politics and to engage in that kind of discourse, which we saw a lot at the beginning and throughout 2020 with the Trump administration. So that part of it is something that a lot of people have expressed and a lot of the responses people have said, which is that Fauci really was very focused, right? He's very, very focused on his job here, and he made sure to kind of quell any of that discourse surrounding the political pressure.
Thanks for that call. Phil, it all makes me think of something you said earlier on, the historical interest of these emails, these early reactions when a lot of the science was uncertain about how this disease spread, the silent spread we didn't know about for the early period of these emails. What kind of lessons do you think we can take from what we're learning here for hopefully a long time in the future, the next pandemic?
I think the largest lesson is that we should take, and I can't pretend to speak with any authority on it, but it is something that we should try to find in the emails, is how do you balance a kind of humility about what we can and can't know, which, you know, you can definitely see Fauci doing. I mean, there's, you know, it's important to recognize what knowledge you don't have, and he certainly appears to do so. But how do you balance that with communicating to the public in a clear way, based on the best of your knowledge, about what is safest while preserving your ability to be wrong, to revise yourself, and to learn from mistakes. That is a very delicate series of tasks. It's something that is kind of, I think, awe-inspiring to a certain extent about the way that civil servants have to respond to. And it's something that we should try to learn from and study.
And in our just last few minutes, Natalie, I assume one Freedom of Information Act request leads to another. Do you have more emails you're waiting to see or other documents you're in search of?
Yes, this is ongoing. The way that FOIA works is that they take a very long time to get you all the documents. So actually, in addition to having more documents coming in from this period and more recent months after June of 2020, we still probably will get more emails from that time period as well. So lots of more documents coming in. So this is an ongoing investigation.
Natalie, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Rob.
And Phil, thanks for being with us again.
Great to be here.
Natalie Bettendorf is a contributor to BuzzFeed. She combed through thousands of emails from Dr. Anthony Fauci from the earlier days of the pandemic, obtained through a Freedom of Information Act request. And Philip Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, author of the book Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act.